A friend of mine recently faced an unexpected lawsuit, not completely unanticipated, but an undesired lawsuit, which will embroil her probably for years in the very unpleasant process of having litigation. She will probably win in the end, but so much money will be spent. It will just be one of those fantastic messes that the world is really good at handing us. She's relatively speaking a new devotee, and the summons, the papers were filed. They actually tried to deliver them on Master's birthday, January 5th. They succeeded in delivering them on the 6th, but they were dated January 5th. And I said to her, well, it's obviously a birthday present from Master. What else could it be coming so appropriately on that day? And of course, it's easy for me to say, because I wasn't the subject of the lawsuit. And it's easy for her to think those thoughts, but not always possible to sustain the kind of positive dynamic energy that one would like to sustain, because life is very challenging. Yesterday, in a little group we were having a satsang, somebody asked me a very serious question about a lifelong struggle that she's had to maintain right consciousness and the sort of sense of personal failure that comes along. And I just started thinking about, well, the simple fact that life is very challenging, and sooner or later we all get confronted with that fact. And positing against that challenge the idea that God is in charge and is sending us what we really need, it's easy to feel that way in the springtime. In the cold, dark winter is when the challenge comes. And I was remembering how every time we start our Sunday service, we say, the voice of God calls us to awaken him. How will he find us when he comes? And with great enthusiasm, we always say, awake and ready. And sometimes when your response is too feeble, we give you a second chance to say it with a little more energy, and everybody stands up and declares, awake and ready. And that's not sufficient. So then the second light bearer will say, and when he asks us to dedicate ourselves to him ever more perfectly, how will he find us? And everybody again affirms, awake and ready. Now, the space between being gathered in this very pleasant space with lots of supportive people and all of us together declaring, and being all alone wherever we are when God actually calls us, is always the challenge. That's the gap on the spiritual path. That's the distance, you know, from the bottom of the spine to the spiritual eye. It's about 3 feet. And the average person, you know, that's the distance between this pulling away and hunkering down and figuring that the known misery is preferable to whatever it is that God might be asking of us, and the actual fact that this is the relationship that we're in. This is the relationship that everyone is in. It's just that the devotee is more aware of it. Some people say, and I'm always one who just campaigns fiercely against this, oh yeah, as soon as you take Kriya, that's when really all hell breaks loose. Or yes, of course you're having difficulties. After all, you're on the spiritual path now. And I think, well, why would anybody take Kriya? Why would anybody be on the spiritual path? And it isn't really at all that things get more difficult. I mean, look around the world around you. Do you think that people who aren't on the spiritual path are having an easy time of it? You know, do you think anybody on the planet has an easy time of it? Every so often, you get a lifetime in which you get to spend all your good karma and you just get to float through. Swami Kriyananda once said jokingly when he was being, during one of the periods of intense persecution, he said, well, in a sense, the people who cause me so much difficulty are really my best friends because they're helping me work out my bad karma, whereas all of you who are so harmonious and loving, we're just spending my good karma here. And of course, it was just the perversion of logic. But there is a really profound logic in there, isn't there? You know, one of the difficulties that we face on the spiritual path is the gradual necessity to become genuinely selfless. I mean, really selfless. We still cling for a long time, even after we get onto the path, with the idea that we have somehow made a bargain with God, The way I think about it is that somehow we write up this contract. This is what I'm going to do, and this is what you're going to do. This is what I'm going to do, and this is what you're going to do. This is what I'll do, and this is what you'll do. And then we sign it with a big flourish. We put it away among our papers. And then God doesn't keep that contract. And we get it out, and we look at it, and we get very irate about it. We never notice that ours is the only signature. It has no divine seal on that contract. Now, everything that we experience in our normal human life that we can access with the experience we already have is a microcosm of the infinite. And if we think about our love relationships, and if we think about setting up our love relationships as contracts, I'm going to do this and you're going to do that. I'm going to love you and you're going to stay with me. I'm going to cook and you're going to make the money, right? You know, I'm going to be nice to you and you're always going to be nice to me. You know, this is the way people think about it. Promise you'll never leave me. Just like that. I'm going to tell you just a totally ridiculous story. There was a couple, this is a true story. She was very romantic and he was a lovely singer, and it was her birthday. And we were actually in a Mexican restaurant over in the Stanford Shopping Center. And Joe Tish and Davey and David and I and this couple and a few others, and it was her birthday. So she turned to him and she said, "Darling, would you sing to me because it's my birthday?" And he was a professional singer, so he was very good. So in a quiet voice in the restaurant, he sang, "If I could ever leave you, it wouldn't be in summer, you knowing how in summer," like this. And he sang mostly the whole song to her, and she was so thrilled, and we were all just delighted. And then Davey turned to Joe Tish and said, Davy and Jyotish are the spiritual directors of Ananda. Davy turned to Jyotish and she said, "Darling, you never sing to me." And he said, "Old MacDonald had a farm." E-I-E-I-O. And then of all things, he chose the pig. Oink, oink here, oink, oink there. You know, we have this. Of course, it was perfect. We were just in hysterics. We couldn't stop laughing. But we have this idea, you know, this is how it's going to be. This is the idea, the dream of love, the this and the that, that we're going to have happen. And we somehow feel, this is what I was starting to say, in human love, if we have a contract like that, how noble is that? How even very simply successful is that? If it's always a question of, you didn't live up to your part of it, I'm not going to give to you until you give to me, we all know, fundamentally, it makes you unhappy and it's a disaster. Now, why would we think that in our divine romance that it would be any different? You know, why would we think that this is the contract, this is the source of infinite love, and what we do with it is we reduce it down to what our little minds can already encompass. We set the little conditions according to our present concept of happiness, and then we demand that God meet that standard. And of course, the problem is he loves us too much to reduce himself down to just that. And the part that we have to keep in mind, and this is always the very difficult part, and this is where another kind of training has to come into play, we have to somehow make a connection through meditation, prayer, devotion, chanting, all of the many different direct techniques we have that give us a glimpse of this other reality which is always surrounding us. Most of the time we just walk around in our sort of everyday consciousness, you know, just thinking about this thing and that thing and all of these sort of ordinary realities, and only occasionally, you know, does the average person remember that there's this great animating force behind all of it. This is what the scriptures say, that there was life, and life was in the heart of everything. And this is what the Gita says, that the great beauty and power of everything in the universe comes from the infinite. This is the source behind it all. Because we live in the material world, and even this is what some misguided scientists are trying to tell us, they think that that matter comes first, and that our consciousness is just a result of our brains. And they don't understand that consciousness comes first, that first there is this tremendous power, and everything that we experience here has its source on a much more elevated and refined plane. Now, if we want to make this experience of life what our hearts know it's meant to be, see, this is the story that we're always living out. If we actually had no faith, we would be content to be miserable. Because what would you try to do? I have a great aversion to cold weather, a modest aversion to cold weather. I just prefer the summer. I prefer the warmth. I prefer light clothes and so on like that. So in the middle of winter, I often play with this attitude. You know, I say to David, how much longer will this last? You know, how much longer will God continue to punish us with this cold winter? You know, but there's nothing that can be done about it because, although we're going to have what they call an unusual heat spell right now, so maybe the prayer does work. But in any case, there's nothing you can do about it. It's just the months of winter, and eventually summer will come. So it's really stupid to go around being upset about it. So in our human lives, in our everyday lives, intuitively we know that our true nature is bliss. And so it's very upsetting to us when we're not in that bliss. When we know that our destiny is to be perfect expressions of perfect love. So it's very upsetting to us when we're not. You see, we have much more faith than we realize. Even if we continually fail, we're intuitively measuring that failure against the success that we know is possible. So there always has to be this understanding that this is what we're really moving toward. And the question is, how do we reach that? And this is what I was saying. We have to have these, we have to discipline ourselves to do enough spiritual practice that we have a perception of that inner reality and realize that all that we're seeking by, here's what I was trying to work with, which was the contract. Let me come back to it for a moment here. The greatest kind of love, always, is that love which just gives because it's the nature of the self to give, isn't it? Mother love is that perfect example. Talking to this friend last night, I was asking her, I said, your two children have caused you quite a bit of grief in your life, isn't it? So let me phrase it differently. They haven't always lived up to your expectations. And she smiled because we all knew, everyone in the room knew that no, they haven't. Okay. I said, has it ever occurred to you, you know, because they haven't kept their side of the bargain that you would withdraw your love from them? And she said, well, of course not. I said, okay. So how about your love for the Guru and your love for God and your love for Divine Mother? Divine Mother hasn't lived up to her side of the bargain, which you laid out in advance. Are you going to withdraw your love from her? You see, we don't usually think of our responsibility to God is the only way I can think about it. And I was thinking further about responsibility as disciples, which is not all of you in this room, but many of you. We take on this role of a disciple. When I first came to Ananda Village many years ago, 1971, I had this extremely one-pointed interest in Swami Kriyananda, the founder of Ananda, who is a spiritual teacher in residence at Ananda Village at that time and very accessible. It was just a whole different era all those years ago. And my commitment was simply to be in his company and to learn from him. And I had then even more such very intense commitment to whatever I particularly want to do. And so there was a certain amount of pride in the fact that I wasn't interested in the community. I wasn't interested in anything else that was really going on. I was interested in learning from him, and that was that. So I had a spontaneous and deep affection and love for him because of who he was and everything he gave back and the gratitude for what he was giving to me. Naturally, my heart went out in gratitude to him. And quite a bit of time went by, and I did my job and did the work I did, but deeply I didn't really care. You know, Swami Kriyananda was trying to build the first Ananda community. He was really working literally day and night to make that community happen, constantly thinking about him. I mean, the amount of energy and willpower he put out is almost inconceivable. Everything that you see Ananda worldwide, including this space, is the result of the force of his will and his energy in that. And I was going to learn from him, but didn't mean anything to me. And we were driving once through the community, and I was in the back seat of the car looking out the window, and just, I think God just put the thought into my head. It said, what kind of a friend are you? you know, here is this person giving his life for this cause. You call yourself his friend, but you're just going to help if it's convenient for you. You know, I don't care. That's your problem, not mine. Now, just in a simple human way, if someone you know is deeply devoted to doing something and your relationship to it is, well, I'm just going to come over and drink tea with you and don't, you know, who cares? That's just your problem, like this. What kind of love is that? Now, what God is trying to teach us is pure, selfless, self-giving love, commitment to the divine cause, what you would call actually is true friendship. Yogananda says that the most elevated relationship to have with God is actually the relationship of friend to friend. And you sort of stop for a moment and think about that, but this is what Master said. He said the only relationship that's completely free of coercion is friendship. Husband and wife, you have certain roles to each other. Mother and child, how could you escape it? You know, child to parent, you have a certain duty. Servant to master, even, you know, the relationship of the beloved. It can be, you fulfill my desires, I fulfill yours. I want, I want. In many languages, in Spanish, the language for love is the same as I want. You know, I want. But friend to friend, you come together in pure freedom as equals. Even Jesus said to his disciples at the end of his life, you know, you call me master, but I call you friend. And then he said the master, the servant may help the master, but he's not privy to everything that the master has. But the friend, we share as equals. Now, there's so many subtleties in that, aren't there? One is that, of course, I give because I love. And the way that I show my loving is because I give. Don't you just treasure in your life those friends who, when you have a difficulty, it suddenly becomes our difficulty? Those friends who were just there in the middle of the night, even when you didn't call them because they just knew that you needed something? The friend in the hot sun who's helping you move and carry the boxes, who brings their truck? I mean, you can just go on and on. And just think how profoundly touching it is every time somebody just steps forward and says, well, if it's your reality, it's also mine. Now, all of human experiences are to train us on deeper and deeper levels of how to be in the divine light. And so in our relationship with God, we have to understand, you know, that this is a relationship of friendship, and it is not a contract, and it's not about what I get, and it's not about whether my desires are fulfilled. I love because it is my nature to love. And I embrace the divine cause because it is my cause. I'm going to digress for just a moment into my favorite subject of tithing, which is an effort I make continuously to try to communicate for your sakes, not for mine. Swamiji gave a little talk about fundraising, which we shared at a fundraising program we had last spring. And Swami talked about the benefits of giving to a divine cause. And sort of at the end of this little five-minute thing, he said, you have to understand, I'm talking about it from your point of view, is what he was saying. Now, so many people I know struggle financially. And our whole country is going through this great new adventure, maybe. Depends on which analyst you talk to, but maybe, you know, we're going to have some really interesting economic times. And it's extremely important for all of us to get into right relationship to money. And this concept of tithing, which is not the same as I have extra money, I'll give it away. Tithing says 90% of what I have is mine and 10% of it belongs to God. It never belonged to me in the first place, because the life that enables me even to earn money is not my own, it's the commission, is how I say it. It was mandated by Moses along with the other 10 commandments, and who knows whether it was in existence prior to that time. He just said part of what you have has to go back to the spiritual work. And in this whole context of everything I was just saying now, I was saying to myself, of course, that's it. You know, especially on our particular path, but on all paths. These masters don't come just to live in this world, chant, and then go back into the infinite. They come out of this deep, heartfelt commitment to help other people. And they help us You know, think about where many of you, some of you are newer, but many of you, think where your life would be if Yogananda had not incarnated, if Swami Kriyananda had not incarnated, if he hadn't given his life to create this. You know, somewhere along the line, every one of you was touched by somebody's effort to help you. Okay? And whoever put out that effort to help you is your dearest friend. And their cause doesn't end when that person dies. Yogananda's power, he planted it in the ether to go on. And his cause is to uplift the world. And as Yogananda says, every good, noble, or philanthropic enterprise sooner or later comes down to a matter of money. Right? And who has money? We have money. What do we use our money for? Do we use it for our cause? When our friends are in need, do we say, I'm sorry, you know, I'm going to the movies and I need some new shoes and, you know, your problem is your problem. Or do we say, of course I'm responsible. And I tried to express that once before. Of course we're responsible. What are we responsible for in this world? Just me? And just those few things that I designate as, you know, I'm going to expand my aura? Or have we accepted this relationship with God, friend to friend, and the reality of what our friend is trying to do is also what we're trying to do? And you see, it puts us in this very different relationship, and the faith required, the belief that where there is dharma, there is victory, all of these different elements come into play. And it helps us to redefine everything about ourselves, and it changes this contract. You know, but I don't have enough, but you haven't given me enough. I can't give more. That's why it's such so beautifully a percentage. Because if you have only $1, you give a dime. If you have only a dime, you give a penny. If you have $1 million, you give 100,000. It's just a piece of whatever God gives you, you give back. Because this is not a contract. This is a responsibility. Now, what that does in us, that teaches us how to love. It's very easy to say, I love you, and then as soon as things get tough, we just walk away from it. Isn't that so? Now, going back to, I was talking about my friend who had the lawsuit, things that come to us. We say, the voice of God calls us to awaken him. And we're awake. We're awake to all our responsibilities in our life as we're living it and the pleasures that we have and the preferences that we have. But the voice of God calls us to awaken him. And as long as everything is just going along, just dandy, will we actually wake up? Will we actually raise our energy level? Will we actually transcend our fears? Will we focus our attention? Will we recognize where consciousness is really coming from? Will we learn to draw that invincible strength, which is our true nature? Will we really learn to love no matter what the world is giving to us? Unless God calls us to awaken him. And so he calls us to awaken him. He says, I'll give you a physical health problem. I'll give you a financial problem. I'll give you a deep disappointment in love. I'll give you an untimely death. I'll give you a career disaster. You know, I'll give you a big pimple right on your nose. You know, whatever it might be, just wherever it is that we're clinging to whatever this world is that just comes and goes and comes and goes and comes and goes. Just time passes and nothing stays the same. We do have these wonderful interludes, and the masters are so sweet. We don't scorn the creation. We don't dislike what's happening in this world, because in the midst of all of that, the Gita tells us, what it is that we admire is really the divine. Swami defines the life that is described in the Bible. He calls it conscious energy. The life that is in us is conscious energy. So we have energy in us, and the goal is to make that energy more and more conscious. And he said something so interesting too. He said, conscious energy expresses itself as enthusiasm. And isn't that what you see in the divine souls? They're just so enthusiastic. They're enthusiastic about sharing. They're enthusiastic about everything that they do. Every time you see Swami Kriyananda or hear Yogananda's voice, you never hear, Yogananda never speaks with a halfway commitment. Whatever word he says, whatever sound he makes, you hear his voice, Om, the cosmic beloved, Om, the almighty spirit, Om, the infinite beloved. There's no halfway about it. It's not Om, cosmic spirit, Om, the infinite beloved, you know. It's just 100% of his conscious energy is committed in this total enthusiasm for whatever comes. Master is one of his famous remarks that he said during the Depression, when he was in America during the 30s, if there was no job for me, I would shake the universe until it gave me a job just to make me quiet down, he said. I would just be such a naughty baby in God's world that I would keep going. You see, that conscious awareness of the energy within us, driving us within, to find out who and what we really are. That's all God really wants for us. He just wants us, the voice of God calls us to awaken Him. Not to awake to all my little comforts, but to awaken Him. And sometimes the only way He can do it, really, is just to pick up all our toys and put them away somewhere. You know, have you ever seen a mother trying to get the attention of a naughty child? She just takes away from him everything that's distracting him, doesn't he? Until the baby finally has to listen. You know, that's exactly what we're like. We're coasting along with good energy, maybe being really nice people. But God is not content with us just being really nice. We must be able, Yogananda said, to stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. Not something that we necessarily wake up in the morning, oh, I hope today I can stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. You know, it's not how we think. But he's declaring to us that's who we are. And that voice of God will keep calling to us until we grow up. Just like any loving mother, any loving father will not give up on that child until that child has reached the potential that the parent can imagine for him or for her. And what kind of love would it be from the parent if they just quit? And what kind of courage would it be from the child if it refused? So our Heavenly Father and our Divine Mother says, I'm sorry, I love you too much. You might think that you could just be in kindergarten forever and that would keep you happy, but honey, it's not going to work that way. You're going to be able to be the infinite spirit. The voice of God calls us to awaken him. How will he find us when he comes? Awake and ready. God bless.